and welcome to Americans for Peace Now's briefing call with Yariv Oppenheimer. We will start soon. We're waiting for Yariv to join us. As soon as he does, we will start the conference call. Again, this is Ori Neer with Americans for Peace Now in Washington. We're waiting for Yariv Oppenheimer to join us. And as soon as he does, we will start our briefing call about the Israeli elections. Yariv will join us soon, and we will then start the conference call. I'd like to thank you for your patience. We're waiting for Yariv Oppenheimer to join us for the briefing call on yesterday's Israeli elections. As soon as Yariv joins us, we will start the call. We'll go on for about 45 minutes, and we'll have both a presentation by Yariv, and it'll be followed by a Q&A. Yariv will announce himself when he joins us, and that will be momentarily. Until then, please wait with me patiently, and we will soon start. Again, this is Ori Neer with APN in Washington. We will soon start our conference call with Yariv Oppenheimer about yesterday's elections in Israel. Please wait patiently with me, and we will soon start the call.
Hello.
Hi, Yariv.
Hi, Ori.
How are you? Thanks for joining
us. How are you?
I'm fine, doing well.
Thank you for having
me. And I will not keep people waiting. We will start our briefing call promptly. I'd just like to remind everyone that the call is being recorded. Okay, so I'd like to welcome everyone to Americans for Peace Now's briefing call on Israel's elections and the road ahead. Joining us to brief us about the election results is my friend and colleague Yariv Oppenheimer, joining us from Tel Aviv, Israel. Most of you know him, so I won't go through a long introduction. I'll just tell you that, as you know, he's the Secretary General of Israel's Peace Now movement. And he's not only a peace activist, he's also a real expert on Israeli politics. I can tell you that he actually predicted a surprise in Israel's elections yesterday when I asked him several days ago how he intends to react to what the polls at the time showed would be a sweeping victory for the right. Yariv said, wait, let's not be ahead of ourselves, because he predicted that there was going to be a surprise. And indeed, there was. Yariv will give us an analysis of yesterday's election results, the surprising results, and then take your questions. Before I start, just a couple of quick housekeeping comments. One is, as I said, this call is being recorded. Right after the call ends, we will have a link to it. So if you want to have a link to the recording, just email us and we will send you the link. The other thing is has to do with the Q&A, and I will tell you about that later. What I'll ask you to do now, though, and I'll remind you later, is after you unmute yourself, and I will explain to you how to do that later on, I will ask you to re-mute yourself. Again, I'll tell you how to do that, and try to keep quiet. Last time around, we had quite a bit of background noise, which was disruptive. I'd also ask you to make your questions short. And one last thing, visit our website. There's quite a bit of resources there on the Israeli elections. So after that introduction, hello, Yariv. Thank you for joining us.
Hi. Hi, Ori. Hi, everyone.
And maybe I'll start with a quick question, Yariv, and then you can take it anywhere you want. But how do you explain to Americans who may know about Israel's electoral system but don't quite internalize it, how it is that the party that wins the elections, Likud, is perceived by everyone as being the loser of these elections?
In Israel, unlike America, for example, it's not a zero-sum game, and it's a different system. The only way to become a prime minister is if you get more than 61 member of the parliament that will support you. And if you are not getting the 61, so it's a very difficult. It's not possible to be prime minister. Now, in Israel, you are voting for a party and not for the person. You are voting for the political party that will be in the parliament, in the Knesset. And because of the fact that the Likud party got, first of all, a very low number of seats. They got only 30 seats. That is a very low number. If you look at the Knesset, that has 120 seats. So 30 seats or 31 seats is a very low number if you compare it to last election. And the second reason is that, and this is, I think, the most interesting thing, is that this time, for the first time, the what we call the right wing in Israel, the Likud party and the Orthodox religious parties and the more national parties, all together are getting 60 seats, meaning 50% of the chairs in the parliament. And the meaning of that is that Netanyahu cannot have his own coalition, and he cannot control his own future. Meaning that he will, in order to be the prime minister, he will have to bring some parties from the other camp and to have a coalition. Once he will do it, he will depend on their kindness. And if there will be a decision by the parties that are joining Likud from the left to break the coalition and to go to an early election, they can do it. So this time, unlike last time, Netanyahu is not capable of having his own coalition. He will have to put his political life in the hands of his opponents from the left or from the center left, and this is a change this is a big change from last time.
And when you say putting his political life in their hands, you're mainly talking about the big surprise, the big winner of these elections, Yair Lapid and his party Yesh Atid.
Yes, we actually woke up today for a whole new political system. And with this political system, there are some very good news. First of all, the fact that the right wing doesn't have more than 60 seats, and they might even get less or more. We will know the final result in 2 days. But it's a very close. It's very close, and this is very interesting. The second thing is that the extremists from the extreme radical, I will say, racist party, the Kahana people, they didn't get into the Knesset, and they didn't. They are out of the Knesset. This is also very positive. But the biggest surprise is what the new party named Yesh Atid, that is being led by a former television star in Israel, Yair Lapid, the son of the politician Tommy Lapid, that was a very successful politician. So his son now is becoming the head of the second biggest party in Israel, 19 seats, named Yesh Atid. And his agenda is to be in the center, although in his list you can see and you can find some very progressive politicians, new politicians, including people that in the past were members of Labor or Meretz. So I think I will call him eventually center-left, although he will prefer to be called central-right. And the big thing about him is that he gained support from traditional, I will say, left-wing voters, many of them, but he also did the almost impossible and got a lot of support from right-wing people that usually will vote for Netanyahu or even more to the right. And because he has a very good image, he's very famous from television, he's smart, he's intelligent, he's good-looking, by the way. So because of all of this reason, he's the rising star of the Israeli politics. And I will say that, first of all, for sure, he will be number two today in the Israeli politics and in the Israeli leadership. And second, I will say that he has a potential to challenge the right-wing candidate Netanyahu, and maybe in the next election, it's too early to say, but there is a potential that he will be the candidate that will beat Netanyahu in the next election, and maybe will bring a whole different coalition that will be the majority of center-left and not majority of right-wing. So it's a beginning of a new thing. It's very hard to know what will happen. Many of these new parties that are coming every election in Israel rising and falling very quickly. But this time it seems that at least for now, Lapid, the new, is not so new for Israelis because they know him from other things, but the new politician, Lapid, has a potential to be for sure number two today in Israel, but maybe someone that can challenge Netanyahu and can gain votes from the central left, but also from the right wing.
And I want to emphasize something that you mentioned, Yariv, which is that he is unabashedly in support of this two-state solution. He champions this issue in his platform. He has a pretty impressive platform, by the way, which Likud does not have. Likud ran without a platform at all. And I yesterday heard an interview with perhaps Israel's leading pollster, Mina Tzemach, who said that according to her polling data, half of those who voted for Lapid define themselves as right-wingers. So here's someone who supports the two-state solution, supports negotiations with Abu Mazen immediately, without preconditions, talks about separation and things of that sort into two states. And half of the people who vote for him apparently define themselves as right wing. That's an achievement as of itself, I think.
It's very complicated, I will say, because on the one hand you are right, and as I see, Yair Lapid eventually is much closer to our views than for the right wing. He's definitely not a right wing. And not only on the issue of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, but also about some other issues that are related to that, including the Supreme Court in Israel, the justice of law, the money that is going to the settlements, many issues that he spoke about in his campaign, and he spoke the same language that we are speaking. Still, he is trying to not to become a left wing and to become more something in the center in order to be attractive to the right wing. He would like to be a prime minister, so he doesn't want to give away these people that usually were voting for the right wing and suddenly they will find themselves voting for a left wing. Altogether, I will say that I think it's a good thing that we have a new political party that is able to bring votes from the right wing. It's a very important development. The right wing in Israel is much less powerful than it was 2 days ago, and it's a dramatic change. I think that most of the politicians didn't even understand how deep is the change. And the Israeli public also made a very clear message to the right wing: enough pushing us to the extremists. And we don't want to be serving the settlements and the extreme settlers, and we would like to have much more moderate, progressive state, much more normal state. And this is tremendously important. Still, Yair Lapid is not exactly peace now. He's much closer to us than anyone else in the central, in the right wing. But we still have a lot of work to do in order to promote our views and to promote our solution. I'm afraid that although he will be able to prevent many of the bad things that happened in Israel in the last few years, and we are very hopeful on that, but in order to push Israel into a peace, real peace treaty, this is something that that will take some more time, and I think that this is our role in peace now to push forward, including the Lapid party, to that direction.
Good, Yariv. I'm going to go ahead and open the conversation to questions from our participants. I have many questions of my own, but I will go ahead and open this for Q&A. So here's how it goes. I'm going to do something on my end, which will open the conversation for your questions. In order to ask a question, what you, the listeners, should do is hit *6 on your phone. That will unmute you. You will say your name and ask your question. And kindly, what I'd like to ask you to do is, after you ask your question, remute yourself by again hitting *6. So you toggle *6 between muting and unmuting yourself. So in a moment, I will ask you to start asking your questions. Just hang in there for just one moment. Okay, so we're in Q&A mode, and people can unmute themselves by pressing *6, and I will take questions from whoever wants to be the first one to do that.
Hi, this is Matt Doss.
Hello.
Hi, Matt. Go ahead and ask.
Hi. Thanks very much. This is Matt Doss at the Center for American Progress. Thanks, Yari, for doing this, and thanks, Ori, for organizing. On what you said about Lapid's positions on the peace process, I mean, I know that on the Hebrew side, at least, there is, one of their positions is a re-engagement with the peace process negotiations. But, even though he did mention that, it seems that it was his agenda of the Yesh Atid agenda was far more focused on domestic economic issues, the ultra-Orthodox issue. So couldn't one take away from the success that Yesh Atid has had is that it's much safer and it will lead to more political success if you kind of don't engage more strongly on the peace process?
I hope I understand the question. The question is whether it would be smart for Lapid party not to engage himself too much with the peace process, right?
Right. I mean, my question is that the lesson they might take away from here? They had success by focusing on issues other than the peace process.
Yeah. I think that eventually the peace process is an important thing, and Lapid mentioned it many times. He did say things that I think that he's smart enough to understand that they are not realistic, but in order to be elected, he needs to say it. For example, he did say that the Palestinian will have to give away the dreams about Jerusalem and Jerusalem will never be separated, etc. Although we know that for sure once that we will get to a moment of truth, it's very clear that there will be a compromise in Jerusalem. And Lapid's smart enough to know that there will not be an agreement with the Palestinian without having some kind of a compromise on the issue of Jerusalem. I think that Lapid will try to keep balance. On the one hand, to promote something to move out from the deadlock that we are in, especially in the international community, and especially after what Lieberman and Netanyahu did in the last few years. I think that Lapid understands the damage that was being done to the image of Israel, and he will try to do his best to show that something has changed. Also, there is a very good assumption that Lapid will become the foreign minister of Israel, and this is something that is totally related to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. On the other hand, I don't see Lapid in this term pushing forward, has the ability to push forward for a peace treaty. Maybe some progress, maybe less money to the settlements, maybe less settlements activity, maybe more political negotiation, even maybe some kind of short-term agreement with the Palestinians. So I can see progress, but I don't see Lapid going all the way, at least not for this year. But it's also very important and encouraging. It's more than we had before, and first of all, this process of more extreme to the right, going more to the extreme to the right, giving more money and more resources for the isolated settlements, I'm happy to say that this process has been stopped, and this is a very good and, I would say, even surprising development. It's for sure that Lapid will all the time try to keep some distance from what we call the left wing in Israel. He will keep himself a bit more to the center all the time. But I think that if we look deeper inside, we will understand that we are seeing the reality in the same way. He, for example, can be supportive of a college in Ariel, for example, and he can call Ariel a settlement block. This is how we will try to move to the center. But deep in his heart, I think that he totally understands that there will not be a peace treaty without a real evacuation of settlements. And Ariel is in the middle of the West Bank. It will be very difficult to keep it in Israel proper.
Thank you.
Thank you, Reeve, and thank you, Matt. Go ahead, Trudy. This is Trudy Rubin
hi.
With the Philadelphia Inquirer.
Thanks for doing this, and thanks, Yair. I just want to pick up on what you just were talking about. Is there any reason really to believe that a coalition that will have both, if as people are predicting, there's a coalition that has both Lapid and Naftali Bennett's party, and also has a more conservative Likud party, do you really think that there is less likelihood of pushing ahead for what the Peace Now report on settlements said is going on, which is more and more money to isolated settlements, and also pushing ahead with E1. Do you really think that Netanyahu will back off on that? And I also wanted to ask if you think that there is less chance that Israel would strike alone at Iran with this likely government.
I think that both questions, the answer is yes. I think that now Netanyahu will have, by the way, less pressure from his people as well, because there are less members of Knesset that are so right-wing than there were before. But I think that Lapid will try to show to the people in the center and also the people in the left that voted for him that he can make a change. And the change will be on the social issues. The change will be on the issue related to the Orthodox religious communities in Israel. But also the change will be the attitude toward the Palestinians and the United States. I think that if Lapid will be able to show that he, for example, can stop the crisis with the United States over E1, this will be something that he can be proud to show that he achieved. So I will say that there is a good chance that he will be one of the factors that will prevent more right-wing provocation regarding settlements. I'm too skeptical, and maybe he will do much more than that. But I think that this is the thing that he will do. Lapid, partner to his party, he has some partners. By the way, he has Yaakov Peri, the former head of the Shabak, the secret service in Israel, is one of the stars of the new film, The Gatekeepers. And he's also in our position, taking everything, supporting the two-state solution, and I think that he was even a member in one of the NGOs that support it. So altogether, he has members of his party that are very close and influenced to him, that are totally left-wing, or totally peace camp, I will say. I will think that their goal will be to do it, but not to do it in such a way that in the next time no one from the right wing will vote for them. They will have to see how they play with that. And maybe the excuse of we are stopping settlements because we don't want to harm the relationship between Israel and the world, and not because of the question related to the Palestinians, maybe this will be the good excuse. Regarding Iran, same thing. I think that it will be much difficult for Netanyahu now to go for an adventure. He is going to have Lapid in his party, and he's going to have also, it seems that he will have also Mofaz, the former chief of staff, that had a huge campaign about the fact that Netanyahu wants to bomb Iran by himself and to make a disaster in Israel, and he is totally against this move. And now it seems that he might be a candidate to be a minister, maybe even the defense minister. So all of this together shows that also on the issue of Iran, Israel will not, it's hard to see the next government acting by itself and doing things without coordinating and getting the approval or the green light from Washington.
But hi, this is Marianne Stein. Can you hear me?
Please go ahead, Marianne.
Hi, Marianne.
Yeah, well, a couple of questions I had have been answered about specifically whether maybe progress on E1 will be halted, whether things have gone to a point where they can't be. But secondly, sort of segueing from where you've been mentioning the U.S., is do you think that this is a time when Obama would have some opportunity to be a bit more forceful with Israel about advancing the peace process?
I think yes. I think that I'm skeptical about the fact that the next government will go all the way. I don't see, eventually it's not a left-wing government. It will be a government that's been led by Netanyahu and has more members that are right-wing in this government than central-left. Although the central-left will have the ability every day to vote against the government and to go for an early election. And this is new and this is very important. It will it will make the effect of the right wing much less critical. But on the other hand, again, it's not a peacenik government yet. I think that first of all there will be an option to stop what the right wing tried to do, including the things related to settlement. If there will be a possibility, at least in the first 1 or 2 years, to push forward this government to a real peace negotiation, I doubt it. I hope yes, but I doubt it. Maybe a bit later, when Lapid will feel more strong and there will be a feeling that we are in the midterm, then maybe it will be easier to show the government to put the government, the Israeli government, in a dilemma in which they have to make a decision whether to go to a real peace process or not. So altogether, I will say there is a good reason to be more optimistic and much less pessimistic about the future, but it's still not what we are dreaming about. And I don't see Netanyahu shifting so easily, so quickly, and becoming a peacenik. And eventually Netanyahu will be the prime minister, at least until it seems that he will be the prime minister.
Thank you, Yariv. This is Ori Nir in Washington. I'd just like to ask people who already asked questions to re-mute themselves by pushing *6. Yariv, I have a quick question for you. We discussed in the past the issue of having allies, Peace Now and the peace movement in Israel, having allies in the Knesset. And I know that in the past it was quite difficult, both on the issue of peace and on democracy. We have, I think, 56 new members of the Knesset. When you look at the new people joining, do you recognize faces that you know will be natural allies?
Definitely, and more than in the last Knesset. First of all, Meretz, I didn't mention it, Meretz, the most left-wing or the most peacenik party, the party that's related to us the most, doubled its power in the Knesset, and we are talking about 6 seats. This is 3 more than they had in the last Knesset, so we do have another 3. And then if you look at Tzipi Lishni party, the same thing people that we are related to, and they have the whole agenda of Tzipi Lishni is to promote the peace process with the Palestinians. And we got some good connections to many of them, including Amram Mitzna, Amir Peretz, and others. If we look at the Labor Party, so we do have some partners in the Labor Party, including Rav Michaeli and some other new people that came. Not everyone, but we do have some partners there. And if we look at the Yair Lapid, again, they will prefer to hide it, but eventually in Yair Lapid list there are people that used to be in Meretz, and we know them also personally. I know some of them. I don't see them coming to our event. I don't think that they are part of the left wing in Israel or the peace camp in Israel, but they are closer to us than they're close to the right wing. And also Mofaz party, they are not allies of us, but I think that they are closer to us than to the right wing. So altogether, we can see that this Knesset will be a Knesset that it will be easier to work with. We have less members of Knesset that are right wing. And another reason I mentioned it before to be a bit more optimistic is the fact that eventually the Israeli public didn't vote for the extremist right-wing party, the racist one, that at least for now is out of the Knesset. And this is a very good news, because there were in the last Knesset the Kahana people. And morally, I feel better in a society that doesn't let them to be part of the political system.
Thank you. Do we have another? Yes.
Hello.
Yes, please go ahead.
Steve Steinberg in Montreal.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Yuri. Will the Labor Party take any lessons from this election in its relations to the peace process?
Hi, Steve. I think they do. According to all the people that are speaking today in the media, including myself, but some members of the Knesset and other senior people in the Labor Party are speaking about the mistake that the head of the Labor Party, Shelly Yachimovich, did when she was trying to kick out the left wing from the Labor Party and all the time to flag.
I'm afraid that we may have lost Yariv. Yariv, are you still on? We may have lost Yariv. Are you on, Yariv? Okay. So this is Oren here in Washington. We'll wait for Yariv to call back into the conference center. He was probably cut off.
Hello?
I will. Before Yariv, are you there? Are you with us? I will just tell you that Yariv is a member of the Labor Party, and he took some time off his position as Secretary General of Peace Now to actually run in the primaries on the issue of Israeli-Palestinian peace. He did not make it into a realistic slot on Labor's list, and then rejoined Peace Now and again now is its Secretary General. I'm interested to hear from him when he joins us about his lessons from the unsuccessful attempt to make this issue front and center on Labor Party's platform. Yariv, have you rejoined us? Are you with us again? I'm afraid we're still waiting for Yariv to join.
I have a question. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Go ahead, and what I'll try to do is I'll try to address your question in Yariv's place until he rejoins us. Who's calling?
Okay.
Who's asking?
This is Hanan Al-Badri, Al-Masri Liom, calling from Washington, D.C. I have a question regarding the new government in Israel. How do you think will the cooperation between such a new government and the neighbor in Egypt with the Muslim Brotherhood?
Hello.
Thanks, Yuri. Thanks for rejoining us. We had a question.
Sorry for that. It was...
Yeah, you got cut off.
The line was cut for some reason. Yeah.
So let's do this. If you want, you can complete the reply for the question that was asked. And I have to admit, I'm not sure that I... Oh, the question was asked about labor,
about the Labor Party. Yeah.
And what I told our listeners was... I'll just to quickly brief you. I told them that you actually ran for a slot on Labor Party's list on the issue, on the ticket of Israeli-Palestinian peace, and I said that I'd be interested to hear from you what your experience was. So maybe you want to address that really shortly, though.
Yeah, I would say shortly that I think that there is now a process in the Labour Party of people asking themselves how we got so low in the result. And one of the immediate answer is that we lost, the Labour Party has lost votes for Meretz and for Tzipi Livni due to the fact that the Labour Party had decided to not to support the peace process, to ignore it, even to be a bit hostile to the left wing, to say to people, if you are left wing, don't vote for us, go to Meretz. All this together, I think, made it very, very difficult for potential voters to support Labour Party, and the people in the Labour Party now saying that they are sorry. And I think that this is an important lesson for the Labour Party.
Thanks, Irvin. Another question that we had here from Hanan al-Badri here in Washington was what do you expect the relationship between Israel's next government and Egypt's government, Egypt's Muslim Brotherhood government to be? If you can comment a little bit about the relationship between Israel and Egypt.
I think that the answer for that is also depends on what's going on in Egypt, and I don't have the ability to know the Egyptian political system or the forces in the political system in Egypt. According about Israel, I think that Yair Lapid, again, if he will be the foreign ministry, and it's look likely, he will do his best in order to improve the relationship between Israel and the rest of the world, including Egypt, including the United States. But the ability to improve the relationship is not just speaking, it's also about acting. And if this government will be less radical, and if this government will be less radical, and if it will be more moderate, I hope it will be easier also to improve the relationship between Israel and Egypt. Still, I think that the only real way to improve the relationship between Israel and Egypt is to have a peace treaty with the Palestinians. And optimistic as I am, I don't think that this will be the result of this current government, at least not for the next few years.
Thanks, Yuri. Let's take the next question. Go ahead, please.
I have a question from Boston, Yehuda Ben-Dror.
Okay, so let's have a question from Yehuda, and then there was another person who asked simultaneously.
Yeah,
you'll be the next one. So first, Yehuda, please.
Okay.
My question concerns the young settlers, and particularly with their price tag attacks. Will this new government be able, or will it act more forcefully to stop this from going on?
Definitely yes. Definitely yes. This is, for example, a topic that will be very helpful for Lapid to show that he's in the center and he's against the radicals. And I think that for sure, yes. By the way, because the right wing will feel now that in some ways they are in the opposition because they are much less effective than in the past, so we might see more action of price tag because they will be more disappointed and they will be more they might become more radical. So I think that there is a chance that we will see more of this phenomenon, but we will see more action against it by this next government. I can be optimistic about that.
Okay,
Yuri.
Hi, this is Jim. Can you hear
Frank?
Me?
Yes, go ahead, Jim.
Yes, hi. Jim Vitarello in Washington, D.C. I have two related questions. One is, whatever happened to Kadima? I never heard anything about them. The Washington Post article today never mentioned them. Did they even run a candidate?
Kadima actually broke up, and after Tzipi Livni has lost Kadima, she retired for political life, and then she ran in with this new party. Mofaz was losing, Mofaz took over Kadima, and he was losing votes all the time. Kadima eventually ran in the in this election, and they got in a very they got enough votes to get into the Knesset. It was very close call, but eventually they did it, and they are in the Knesset. But they got only two seats. One seat is for Mofaz,
wow.
The other one is for Israel Hasson. So from all this big thing called Kadima, we have only two seats that has left. Yeah, but we have new Kadima. Many people are saying that the new party of Lapid is...
Right. And so that was my follow-up question. What do you think, I know it may still be too early to know exactly the number, but what would be your approximate guess of the non-right-wing party members in the Knesset today? Would it, I was trying to count them up, including the Arab members. Would you say it's close to 60?
The new Knesset?
In this new Knesset that was elected, and again, obviously, we don't know exactly how much each party will get, right?
We will know hopefully by the end of this week, because they are still counting the votes for the soldiers.
Right, they still
but
are.
Altogether,
right.
It seems that we now have 60 people that are not right-wing or Orthodox religious, so it's actually 50% of the seats. But it might become 61 or it might become 59 as well.
It might change a bit. Close. All right. So that's good.
Yeah.
So even though obviously BB is... I'm sorry, good.
I'm saying that this is the first time that we got this kind of result, I think, since 1992.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I think as you referred earlier, this allows the center and the left to block a number of things that Bibi may want to do in his future government, which I think is great news. And maybe it may also mean, I don't want to ask you this, whether this would happen, is besides Lapid, do you think anyone else from the center left would be invited to join his government?
Invited for sure. Labor Party said said clearly that they will not get inside. But Tzipi Livni, I can see her getting inside the party, the government, and make it even more moderate. The same with the leftover of Kadima, the two seats of Mofaz. So I can see that it will not be only Lapid. Lapid, by the way, said that he will not get into the coalition by himself, and he will not do it alone. So I think that there is a good chance that we will see a bit. We will see more people getting in, more members of Knesset in the coalition.
Ah, good. Good news. Thank you.
Hi. Hello.
And, this is Frank Gutman
from Montreal.
Let me just. We had Frank Bamberger waiting patiently. So Frank, go ahead, and then there is another person who just started asking. So whoever that is would be the next.
Frank Gutman from Montreal.
Mitchell Putnick, I've been asking for a while. Okay.
Okay.
Arif, thanks for your report. That was very helpful and hopeful. Did I understand you correctly that you expect Lieberman to resume his foreign policy, head of as foreign minister? Doesn't that depend on whether he's cleared of the charges? And if he isn't, if he can't resume the ministership, who do you expect? Who do you see as filling that seat? Do you think Netanyahu will take it himself?
I said at the beginning that I think that Lapid will be the foreign minister. Foreign minister, yeah. The Israeli Secretary of State, I will call it. And instead of Lieberman, it's very unclear yet, because Lieberman, first of all, is going to be charged. So for now, he cannot be a minister. If he will lose his trial, so he will not be able to be minister at all, at least for the next few years, maybe at least until the end of this term of the Knesset. So it's he cannot go back to the foreign ministry for now. The problem is that Netanyahu promised Lieberman to keep the foreign ministry position open for him and not to give it away to someone else. But now when you have Lapid so strong, everything has changed. And if Lapid will say to Netanyahu, give me the foreign ministry, otherwise there is no coalition, so Netanyahu will not have a choice. So it's still unclear. I think my guess is that eventually Yair Lapid will be the foreign minister of Israel. It's a guess. But I think that this is something that he would like to do, and this will be his way to show that things have changed. What will be the response of Lieberman for this kind of action? I don't know, but Lieberman is much weaker than he was before. The emerging with the Likud didn't bring the goods, I will say. He didn't deliver. He lost a lot of votes for Yair Lapid. Many of the Russians communities that are very secular found themselves voting for Lapid because they felt that he can represent them and not Lieberman. So Lieberman is in a very weak position to be able to demand to become again the foreign minister. So if I have to bet on that, I will say that Lapid will become the foreign minister of Israel.
Thanks.
Thanks, Yariv.
Frank, this is from Montreal.
This is...
Yeah, Frank from Montreal is next, and then we'll have the other male voice that I heard in the background. Go ahead, Frank.
Hi, Yariv. From your remarks, I take it that the newspaper reports that are suggesting that Peres might choose Lapid to form a cabinet is not a non-issue.
Yes, Lapid was saying that he will not be a prime minister in Israel, first of all because he doesn't want to be depend on the Israeli Arab vote, the non-Zionist votes or the post-Zionist vote, so he will not take it. And secondly, feel that he doesn't have enough experience, and if he will do so, this will be something that his supporters will not like. Lapid has all the time to think for the long run, and for the long run he has to keep himself as a candidate to become a prime minister, and if he wants to be a candidate to become a prime minister, he needs to keep the people that vote for him from the right wing to believe in him, and if he will steal the prime minister position from Netanyahu, and this is something that his voters didn't meant to happen, so they will feel that he took away their votes. So I don't see him becoming a prime minister, definitely not for now. There is some conversation about some kind of a change. How do you say,
rotation.
Yeah, but it's very, I will not bet on that. It looks very far away, and I don't think that even Lapid wants it. He prefers to be number two and to be able, for at the moment that he will choose, to break the coalition and to go to a new election and then maybe to be elected to prime minister. I think that this is the more reasonable scenario that he is thinking about.
This is Mitchell Putnick from Washington. What I would like to ask you, Yari, Shani Yakimovich has been talking even well before the election to position herself as an opposition leader. Do you think that she is hoping to force this government to try to find a way to bring the government down early, or rather to work with Netanyahu to sort of push him into things that Labor can support, both domestically and internationally?
I'm sorry, I didn't get the whole question. The beginning, what did you ask? The beginning of the question?
Yakimovich has been positioning herself, trying to position herself along with Tzipi Livni as a long-term sort of opposition leader.
Yeah.
Do you think that opposition will be more trying to bring down the government or trying to push the government into things that she can support?
I think she doesn't know. And actually, if Lapid and Netanyahu are going to join forces, so the opposition will be very weak. It will be. I see Tzipi Livni getting into the coalition, and I see Shelly Yachimovich fighting, especially in her opposition with inside the Labor Party. than becoming a real opposition to Netanyahu and Lapid. It seems that it will not be a strong opposition. I think that what Yechimovich will try to do all the time, if she will remain the head of the Labor Party, is to try all the time to show that Yair Lapid gave up to the right wing. And Yair Lapid actually changed his views in order to keep his seats in the government. I don't know if it will be possible. It's too early to call, and it's very unclear to see what the next government will do, etc. But if the next government will be a right-wing government, and Yair Lapid will be the one that is trying to make it kosher, but it's still a right-wing government, but he will try all the time just to put some makeup on this government, so the job of Yechimovich and others will be to show the public that this government is a dead-end government and Lapid sitting there only to keep his seats stable. It's very early to say whether this will be the case and this will be the criticism. I guess that Shelly Yechimovich eventually, within herself, she's more reluctant to the social issues and less to our political issues. So she will focus on that. And I think that her job as the head of opposition will be all the time to push Yair Lapid and other partners to pull out from the government and to have an early election, then to attack the government as a whole. She will focus her targets on the central left parties that will join the government.
Do we have another question?
Can I ask a question, Orly?
Please go ahead. Yes.
Hi, this is Eva from the San Francisco Bay Area. Thank you, Yariv. Thank you, Orly. Before the elections, it appeared that Naftali Bennett was such a big star. And during this whole conversation, I haven't heard where you placed him within the government, if at all. Could you answer that? Thank you.
Yariv, before you answer the question, I think this will have to be our last question because we're reaching the end of our call. I know that there are many other people there who would like to ask, so let me suggest that people who do have questions email them to me, and I will go ahead and forward them to Yariv. My email address is onir@peacenow.org. Email me the questions, and I will either answer them myself or forward them to Yariv. And Yariv, go ahead and answer the last question. This is about Naftali Bennett, the head of the Jewish Home.
Yeah, in the last week, the media focused a lot on the list of Naftali Bennett, and they showed the Israeli public that Naftali Bennett maybe is very nice and he looks very moderate and he know how to speak, but around him and in his list, there are very extremist characters, including one that was speaking in America about blowing up the Temple Mount, and this was a report in the most important television show on Friday evening in Israel. And this made many people to understand that although the package looked like a very Obama-style campaign, the substance is radical, right-wing, conservative, and even scary, scary candidates in the list. And this made many people changing their view and not voting for Bennett. Some of them moved to Yair Lapid, some of them went back to Likud maybe, some of them, I don't know, maybe went to Labor, many of them went to Yair Lapid and actually jumped from one side to another, and we have to be very happy about it because it was a movement of the last week or so, and according to the results, Naftali Bennett is again only 11 seats, and if you compare it to what the parties of Naftali Bennett had before, it's not so far away from what he had. I think it's around 30% more than he got before, like 4 or 5 seats more. It's not such a game changer like we thought it will be. And most of the people that eventually vote for Bennett are right-wing Likud people that shifted from Likud to Bennett. So it's not so significant if you look at the balance between left and right in Israel. He might be in the. He really wants to be in the coalition. Most of the media people are saying that he will be. I myself have another guess. I think that Netanyahu will keep him outside. But if he will be in the coalition, so the for us it will be a signal that this coalition is not really serious about the peace process, But it's much less important and effective than it was before.
Great. Thank you so much.
Yariv, thank you very much for joining us and for this briefing. I'm sure that we'll have more of these perhaps when a coalition is put together and when there is a new government in Israel and going ahead as well. I would like to really quickly plug our NewsNosh. This is our daily review of the Israeli media that is sent out in the morning to have with you a cup of coffee. For those of you who haven't done so, go to our website. There's a big button there that says NewsNosh. Click on that and join. It's free. Again, thank you very much, Yariv. This ends our call. Those of you who are interested in a link to the recording of the call, send us an email and we will send you the link to the call. Thanks again, everyone, and have a good day.
Thank you, Ori. Thanks, everyone. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye now. Okay.